So we really needed to fix that. He has a screensaver on it, so the mouse doesn't move every so often. You're going to see a nice random screensaver, but...
Okay, won't stand on your slide for too long.
Yeah, exactly. Hopefully.
I didn't risk materials when I registered.
Yes.
You're not the only one.
Okay.
Exactly. The materials are online at compress.lairdoff.com.
I just want to say, in addition to that, the registration folks, if you go downstairs, you can pick out somebody else's tutorial book if you're interested. Otherwise, they're $30 a piece. You get a free one since you didn't get one here. Yeah. And you can go online.
And you can see it. That's got to improve the ratings for this talk.
Excellent marketing.
I just gave you all a $30 value.
They sent you the bill, though.
Oh, well, yeah. Minor issue.
No, but they are online. They're in PDF format, plain HTML format, and... fancy little, I have all these sliding bullets and stuff. You can see that online as well. It all saves paper. I mean, go environment. Just like all your bags are made out of recycled material. So this is advanced PHP. We're going to be discussing, advanced PHP. It's pretty straightforward. It's going to be given by myself and Andre. Andre works for Fast Search and Transfer. I'm a .com bum, and we're just going to go over a bit of the advanced ways of using PHP. We're both PHP developers, and we're going to tell you how to improve the performance and stability of your piece and how to be really cool with it. So first area is about performance. And so let's go. By the way, this presentation system is by Rasmus here, and so blame him, but...
Yeah, focus. Push him up.
Yeah. Our X crashed. We'll try all the one.
Jiggle the cord.
Yeah. I think I'm going to step in the cord.
It worked.
Anyhow, the presentation system is very good. Yeah, it's the screensaver that did it. Sure. This, actually, while we're waiting for this, I can plug his presentation.
Torvald's fault.
He'll have a lightning talk on it soon, and it's all in XML, so you can take a presentation to find your information and then generate it, as I said, in PDF, HTML, etc. That'll be at the PHP Lightning Talks.
And Thursday morning.
Which is Thursday morning, yes. So come out, I can start on it because I know the first thing by head. Again, these are online, so you don't need to write everything down. Write just the stuff down. Or if you're sleeping, just don't worry about it. Yeah. Okay. Anyhow. Performance in your PHP application. I think we'll all agree that PHP performance, that's a good thing. If you see a lot of the scripts out there, a lot of the reasons for not using PHP, performance is one of the main ones. However, when you use PHP, there are a lot of ways where you can get performance to be comparable or even faster than C code. Because one of the things a lot of people overlook when they program PHP is that a lot of people don't know how to program C. And when you program C the wrong way, besides having a lot of site faults, it can be very slow. You don't know how to use memory location properly, or you don't use memory location properly. But even then, PHP does have a substantial overhead. And we're going to go over a bit of that. The three major problems with performance in PHP scripts, which are on the slide that we were going to be at, are... memory usage? Is that on now?
Yeah.
Okay. Memory usage, CPU usage, and,
external resources.
Yeah. See, she has it on her laptop, so. We'll just...
One of your
songs. What?
Just run the browser now.
Anyhow, memory, external resources, and CPU usage. The biggest factor in that is Resource usage, yes. Resource usage is where all of your problems occur. That's connecting to SQL databases, forking processes to get results, format data, whatever. Having sockets connecting to custom programs. There you rely on stuff that's not PHP. And when you do that, that's where slowness occurs. The biggest slowness in any application, some people might disagree, is most often bandwidth. Because what happens with bandwidth is whatever you're using, if you're connecting to a MySQL database, well, where is the real overhead? Okay, yeah, you might have a really slow server, but it's fetching all those results from the database into your program. The same problem occurs when you send data to the user. It's very sexy, by the way. When you send data to the user, you have to rely on their bandwidth. Oh yeah, here's a cool image when it loads. It was a pretty image.
Too much bandwidth.
Exactly. For example, there you go. That's the best way to get performance for PHP applications.
You'll be passing those out, Cameron.
Of course, along with your free tutorial guys. Okay, we're going to full screen now.
Full screen?
F11.
F11. Oh, sexy. Alright, so major blockages. So bandwidth is one of them. Another one that's a major blockage is CPU usage. It's not as big as other ones. That's when you populate data, when you are munging things from different sources, when you have excess loops. A lot of people like to have excess hash lookups instead of caching that. That's where CPU usage can screw you a bit. And memory usage, finally, well, that depends on how much memory you have. If you're IBM, memory usage is not a problem for you. If you're a smaller company and you only have 256 megs of RAM, you hold 30 megabyte strings in your PHP program, it's going to be slow with 150 Apache processes running. So those are three major areas. First thing we're going to go into is sockets. All right, performance problems. With sockets, makes you network dependent. Applications that run extremely fast locally can run very slowly remotely. Also, what happens if the person on the other network goofs up? You know, there's some incompetent, and he makes your networks all down. You then have extreme slowdowns. Even just to print an error message, the network is currently down. You have to test that. You also have, not so much, but it's related to memory as well. TCP/IP connections have significant overhead compared to other types of connections. If you're using PHP, you shouldn't be too worried about that. But now some tips. See, it slides. I love that. If you're doing local sockets, you can just fork a process, call something else. You don't always need to use a socket to access data and communicate. It's often much more efficient to use pipes. Also, you can have programs. This is more of a C area, but it also works nicely in PHP. You share memory to share data between different processes. Of course, that's not very memory efficient, but it's very efficient when it can when dealing with resources. Establishing a connection is very costly. A lot of people, I've seen scripts, MySQL connect, MySQL query, MySQL close. MySQL connect, MySQL query, MySQL close. You can reuse connections. Really. I promise you this. And therefore, think about how you cache connections and how you can reuse them. SRM, which I'll get into a little bit later, will also allow you to have persistent connections besides just MySQL pconnect, which caches connections via the Apache process. You'll be able to cache and have, say, connections running for 2 days if you like. However, we'll go over that a little bit later. When transferring large chunks of data, HTTP, which is, let's face it, PHP is great for the web, and that's where the focus is, and that's what the focus of this talk is. When transferring large chunks of data to the user, HTTP supports content transfer encoding, which allows you to encode your web data in GZIP format. And that's really good simply because, well, you're sending less data. And yes, it's CPU intensive and a bit memory intensive, but again, the major problem is bandwidth. And that can cut, I've seen it where it cuts down data by 80% bandwidth. And also, I'm on a shared hosting server and bandwidth costs me, I use this hosting server in Italy. It costs $50 a gigabyte. Yeah. So you don't exactly want to be spending a lot of money on bandwidth. This is a good way to cut that down as well. All right, next slide. Okay, so file I.O. Disk access is slower than memory access. That's self-apparent. So you also have to, one of the reasons is besides it's just a slower access time on the disk, you have to lock when you're doing high-performance sites and high-traffic sites. You have to lock files if you're accessing them, so you don't have simultaneous writes or usually you don't want to read while somebody else is writing to the file as well. So you need to have a method of locking and blocking operations when you connect to open a file. And that really hurts you. Blocking is slow. File I/O tips. Slides again. Use the disk in concentrated bits. So that means if you have to write something to the disk, don't write it one line in one file, one line. Write all your data at once, if possible, and do that after you send your information to the user. You don't want to be writing data at the top of your script, then printing out data. HTTP is chunked, so print as much as you can to the user and try and get a somewhat working website, and then do your writing if you have to do file writing. You can do reading throughout the file, but try and keep writing towards the end. Don't read much file memory. Try to use better methods for access. For example, a lot of people just do fread file size file and read a huge 20 megabyte file into memory and then ask, why is my regular expression so slow? Well, you're going over 20 megabytes of data and you only have 256 in your computer. Try and read it, for example, line by line if you do that, because then you're freeing memory after you're done searching it or using it. There are cases where, of course, you'll need to have a big file in memory. But try and minimize that as much as possible and come up with creative solutions in order to do it. All right, the next one. Yeah, do it. Do not read small files from disk. You don't want to read a lot of small files from disk if you can avoid it. Store it in data structure, store it.
Doesn't that kind of go against the locking? If you do more fine-grained locking, the smaller files. Get around the write problem.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you have to do writes, yes. What this I'm more talking about is if the file itself just, I mean, that's one tip you can use for large files, for example, and locking. But if the file itself, the nature of the file, is very small, then what you want to do is just keep in your PHP script, find a way to make that persistent. A lot of times, for example, if you have translations in a file that's relatively small, compile that into a PHP file and then include that, cache include. Again, oh, that's a good point to point out. It's not mentioned fully in the presentation because it's a little bit out of the scope of PHP. However, use an accelerator or a cache, the Zend cache or PHP accelerator. What they will do is they will cache your PHP scripts in memory, the compile structure, and then they load that from shared memory or they load that from a memapps file. And that'll increase your application speed just from the top, sometimes up to 300% in the raw PHP speed. And also, that works great with include files because they cache includes, meaning when you include it, they'll insert it almost like a macro into your PHP code. And so you don't have to worry about includes. That's great for translations, for example.
What were those two suggestions? The two products you suggested?
Oh, PHP Accelerator is a free product that allows you to cache PHP applications. Zencache is a really expensive commercial product that allows you to cache PHP applications.
Zencache?
Yeah. Okay. And you have a lot of money to waste. I mean, definitely spend it on the Zencache simply because we want to support PHP. And it's also you get commercial support and you get something else with it. And, oh yeah, you get really pretty statistics and it's sexy, like the presentation system. But the PHP Accelerator is free. It's not as sexy, but it works just as fast. at least on their benchmarks. then again, Zencash were faster on their benchmarks, so it depends. Do it for your own site, see if it's worth it. And let's start with a PHP accelerator or even an open source cache. PHP accelerator is somewhat closed source. However, there are open source caches like the APC cache, which is at apc.communityconnect.com. Just Google for APC, for example, and you'll find that these are not unpopular or hard to find. And that is open source if you want to use open source software. The free stuff is, well, it's free, so as in beer. Mm-hmm. And therefore, it's also a good option. I believe he's trying to make it a commercial product now.
Is he?
That's what I've heard from a few people.
Accelerate?
Yeah.
But he's never open sourced it, so.
Yeah, but it's pretty good.
Yeah, so far. The APC guys is sort of more fruitful in that
sense. Well,
best performance.
Yeah. I mean, it's, yeah, well, he has a little optimizer in it. I have the source pack, and it's really not that good. It can be replicated pretty easy, but it does its job. He is, I believe, trying to make it a closed source project, as is Xdev out of becoming closed. However, use the caches to do it. There's no reason not to use a cache of some sort on your site. If you're complaining about performance, that first place to look. Tom, put them in the place where they lose, where you don't have as much user. It doesn't get in the way of the user as much. Alright, SQL queries. Learn SQL. That's the most important thing I can say. When you're doing an SQL query, data doesn't appear out of like a magic. It actually comes from somewhere and is transferred over a socket. I know most of you probably already know that because it's something that's been beaten to death. But if you look at a lot of PHP scripts out there, they just do a select star from database and then sort it all in PHP, limit it all in PHP. So I figured at least deserve mention here. If you don't do it, that's fine. If you do do it, just change. full text indices. These are both a problem and a good thing. Don't misuse a full text index. Full text indexes allow you to search large strings of data much quicker. However, it's not a license to search a 2 million row database by a full text query. That's extremely slow. They are very good to use, but don't use them for search engines. There are other ways of doing that. And finally, the like clause. It's a good clause, just don't abuse it. The percent signs that allow you to do fuzzy matching with a like clause are not that fast because they have to do a lot of matching. Try and optimize that as much as possible. If you're searching small data sets, full text indexes are fine. The like clause is fine. Most things are fine and get away with it. But as you have bigger databases, really be careful and benchmark that as much as possible. So if you see you're going really slow, investigate some other options. SQL tips. Study and learn database optimization. There could be 20 tutorials on this and it still wouldn't be properly covered. There are a lot of books out there that will teach you that. You can also just check it online. There are tutorials and presentations this week that teach database optimization. I suggest if you're doing a lot of database work and you don't already know how to do it well, go to those presentations and learn that. Failing that, use the following tips. use the limit clause a lot, I believe. Was that your idea? Rasmus here was the person who thought of the limit clause for MySQL.
Or MSQL.
MSQL, yeah, okay. It's a long time ago. that allows you to say, I only want 10 rows from the database. Don't give me more. Or I want rows 50 from 60 of the results set. And that is an excellent way of limiting the amount of data you have to pull down. He's reading email, by the way. Never use a like.
Yes.
Don't use a like or a full text again. Use htdig. use ASP.Seq, use somebody else's search engine. These are much better optimized for searching your website. Building your own solution can be okay when you need a specialized search, but look into using open source solutions first, because they spend a lot of time and a lot of trial and error trying to make their products better. And you never use a like in a full text. I've had people up where they said, oh man, MySQL is so slow. On 2 million records, it takes 15 seconds to search. Well, yes, if you're doing a like clause on a full text index, it most likely will. Most databases use the concept of they just have keywords which they search, and then they have ranking systems, so the higher a site is ranked, the quicker it gets pulled up. And therefore, use that instead. The only thing worse than using a like clause is building your own one in PHP. Please, try it. MySQL supports regular expressions in a like clause. It's not the best thing to do, but try and do that. Try and, again, bandwidth is the most important thing to optimize. And therefore, you need to use a like clause if you're going to be doing that processing in PHP. Please search the FAQs. I found sometimes I'm like, all right, there's no way to do this in MySQL. I've got to do a like clause in PHP. I got to sort my results. I go online and I search, and I see some very nice little SQL query that'll do it for me. So it's surprising what people will think of. All right, CPU usage. Avoid using frequent array accesses. A lot of people don't realize what goes on under the surface in PHP. When you access an array that's actually a hash lookup, I assume everybody knows what a hash is. If they don't, please speak up now, and I'll go over it. Okay. It has to hash the string, then look it up in a nice table, and then turn that to you. For example, right here, add name doesn't change. Put that in a variable, and then print that out. That saves you a hash lookup for each of the 20 iterations. So always try and cache variables in. You can use it temporary variables to skip your application a bit. I believe also if you use an accelerator, this will be if you use Zen's cache at least, I think this will be optimized out. However, it's good programming practice in general. Shorten required executions. If you can avoid doing loops, avoid using loops. A loop must finish its execution cycle. You can't do anything else while you're in a loop, at least in PHP. And therefore, try and get out of them as much as possible. Loops also have, okay, now we're getting low level and optimizations that don't really matter, but try and unroll loops as much as possible. It's not for programming convenience, and programming convenience is PHP. That should be your first option, modularity and convenience. However, if you can avoid it, try doing it. Also just use an accelerator or cache, and it'll unroll the loops for you. Avoid rebuilding large data structures. It's pretty self-explanatory. Don't rebuild a structure that doesn't change every script. Try either generating, for example, translation files. Generate them ahead of time and then include them in your script. Try serializing it some of the time if you won't need it very often. And finally,
what is serializing?
Okay. Serializing. I know you should know this.
I'm doing it for the benefit of us.
Sure. He needs to learn PHP. It's horrible. But
I'm learning Tom right now.
Okay. Anyhow, serializing data is taking structures are held in memory as usually an array or something. It's taking that array and turning it into a string value. And then that's a serialization of the data. It's taking it and putting it into a human format almost. And it's an unhuman format.
You tried reading serialized
data? It's not that bad, actually. But it takes it into a non-array, basically into a string. That's what that is.
Something that can be stored in a database, for example.
Exactly.
File system.
Yeah. And you take that and then you can load that back into your script as well. And it'll take the string and convert it back into a data structure. And if you're regenerating data structures, use serialization for that. I'm probably going to get smacked for this one, but look for alternatives to regular expressions. I mean, regular expressions can be very fast, especially when you have, because it's written in C. It's written as a state machine. PHP is slow when it comes to parsing. C is fast. So regular expressions get compiled down to some sort of state machine. So it is good when you have complex data structures you need to deal with. However, when it's just parsing one word out of a string, there are easier ways to do it. For example, next slide. Slow at regular expression. Right there, we take data around a at sign. This is not a proper email parsing team. Please, nobody put this in your code. however, right there, we just get the first... Oh, sexy. Alright. Okay, so you have that right there. That catches the data before the at sign. That catches the data after the at sign and places it in matches. And then we print out the data after the at sign. So right there with our regular expressions, it's just the string arpause, which is gets the last recurrence of the at sign and data, and then we'll do a substring on that. That's much quicker than compiling a regular expression, and then compiling it, executing it, and retrieving the results from the array. Okay, let's see. Fast regular expressions. Yeah, we talked about that. They're faster when it's a complex scenario. Just don't use it for everything like Perl programmers. Actually, what Perl has is it's very cool. They will, if you do something simple, it'll optimize it into, for example, a string plus. I don't believe PCRD does that. I'm sure they don't. Okay, PCRD does not do that. This is actually one of the areas where you'd be surprised how much speed you'll gain in your applications. Pre-generation, a lot of people generate things that maybe change twice in a month, twice in a day. Try and pre-generate as much of your data as you can, or at least portions of your data, that way, or cache it on the output. When you pre-generate, you save the overhead of the PHP parser. For example, if you're just creating, now we're not talking about a shopping cart, but an online catalog of your products, and you grab from the database, and then you display it. Instead of doing that online catalog and just displaying static data, every so often generate HTML files from your database, and then display them, because you save PHP our parser overhead in that manner.
I've seen people who actually create an HTML static page, and if it gets a 404 error, the error handler goes and generates the page for it.
Exactly. That's another great way of doing things. You do lose a little because you have to generate a 404 at first, and it looks ugly on links, and we all know that open source software rules and the command line rocks. Yeah, I've had that problem with it.
No, but you don't actually. He's talking about generating stuff through the error document handler.
The
404 never gets to the browser.
That's right, yeah. Okay, when you're using Apache, that's right. If you encounter a 404, you can pass it off to a PHP script, which can then regenerate that data. And that's another way of being able to do it. Caching is probably the oldest, I just love this pointer, is probably the oldest way of optimizing your scripts. It's used in pretty much every language. It's saying, okay, this data can be saved for, say, for example, for 1 minute. So we'll save it and spit out that data instead of regenerating it each time, every 1 minute. And then if it needs to be regenerated, we'll do it. It's extremely efficient. When, for example, you want to download the stocks from Yahoo, they don't appreciate it if you're giving them 100,000 requests per minute, especially since they only update the stocks every 15 minutes. So to save that, you can cache the stocks every 15 minutes, file, and then just serve it up in that local file. You save the network overhead, you also save Yahoo from killing, and that's pretty nice. Next slide. Alright, will we go over that? Yeah. Yeah, many dynamic websites don't actually need to be dynamic. Some do. Shopping carts, You need to see what quantity is left. That needs to be dynamic. But the majority of websites out there really don't need to be dynamic. And so you can pre-generate themselves. That's okay. Even fewer dynamic needs, you can pre-generate, for example, your page, generate the footer of your page, and then just the center portion of your page. Now this doesn't really save you the overhead of the PHP parser, usually, but it still does save you the overhead of generating that each time if you generate it into an HTML file. Next. I'm doing my phone. He's using my phone and calling people. Alright, cool. Okay, Squid is mad cool. They use it on PHP.net, and mad cool, by the way, is very cool. External, basically what it does is it acts as a front end for your web server, and it will cache things for you, and it will check if it's updated, then it will send it through. It's an excellent way, for example, downloads. You can just have Squid serve up cache downloads and avoid the going through the overhead of having Apache serve up the request manually. It's an excellent way. Not only Squid is also very effective in clusters, which we'll go over. However, even on a single server machine, it's actually quite good at caching data and being smart for you. So you don't have to have the overhead of Apache requests. Another thing that you might want to look at is THTPD. If you're serving just plain HTML or you're serving a lot of downloads, THTPD is a very small web server with a very small memory imprint, and tunnel all your downloads to the THTPD server and have Apache serve up your dynamic content. And that'll be another way of really saving speed.
Where's that?
Well, that's good. Just Google it.
Squid cache.
Oh, Squid cache? Oh, that's we have a link to. Actually, all the Webbit. Because he works so fast, but,
would you repeat that name?
THTTBTD. It's too hard to pronounce, man.
Put a T in front of HTTPD.
Okay.
THTTPD. Or threaded. It's not actually threaded.
It's tiny HTML server. I cannot pronounce that for the life of me. So when I say the B sound, it's just a B. caching is saving information. It's probably the most universal technique for performance enhancement.
That's a problem with sliding bolts. You don't know how many there are.
How do we fix that?
An interface.
That'd be cool. Well, we actually need to go next now. Okay, so here's a simple example of how you can cache. PHP.NET has been quite slow lately because, oh yeah, by the way, when you download new versions of PHP, please one of the local mirrors because we get a lot of traffic on the main PHP.NET server and it's good if you can distribute that. However, we're not using mirror here, so we need to cache it. And right there, it's a cool thing, we print get php.net. And, okay, that calls our main function. But right here, we define a cache file, which is, we put that in the temp directory. Temp is writable for Apache, usually. We do md5 with php.net because we don't want to overwrite some other file, and that's pretty much unique. And then we have sh, throw and use, as an underscore, just to be really unique and special. And then we define this cache time in seconds. 180 seconds is good. We could probably do it half a day, and that would be okay. Then we get php.net, we do a little test, we stat the cache file. If it's not there, then we haven't written the cache file, so we download the URL. If cache time is less than the elapsed time, then we return the cache data. And finally, if that fails, then we go to download the URL directly and scroll. Alright, down here is a really cool function. By the way, I usually have my functions on a different line here, That's because I like searching for without having a function in front of it. It's probably bad coding style, but oh well. right here is the PHP version compatible way of downloading a file. New versions of PHP have a function called file _get _ contents that will download the file for you. Here's just an easy way. File downloads php.net and returns an array of lines. Then we implode that by nothing. So we have the data itself. Then we open our cache file. We lock our cache file with an exclusive lock. This is somewhat wrong considering we don't, we don't respect the read locks here, so that would fail. But had we respected the read locks, that would allow us to be concurrent. We write the data to the cache file, and then we unlock the file and close it. Finally, we just return the download URL, because we don't want to have to read from the file. It's not efficient, so we just print that up. And then we have the cache data function, which instead of taking it from the URL, takes it from the local cache file. And I just want to stop if anyone has any questions.
What does implode?
Implode? It joins us out, but what does join do then?
It's join.
It's sort of, okay, join. It's essentially join. If you're a programmer, implode joiner.
The problem really is that we never had a function that would take the entire file and put it into a single variable. We had a function that would take a file and put it into an array, which is what he's using there, the file function, that takes the cache file and puts it into an array, one line per element of the array. But he wants everything in a single string. And for some weird reason, nobody ever wrote a function to do that. So everyone uses this thing that takes an array, implodes it, and puts no delimiters between each line. It basically turns the array into a single string by doing that implode call. In 4.3, we have the file get contents function that actually gets all of a file and puts it into a string. I personally hate this whole implode file thing. It's
a non-hate function. Don't we have a new function?
He's reading his email again.
Yeah. But basically, I much prefer doing an fopen and doing fread file size as the number of bytes to read in and putting all that into it. I think that's cleaner and more efficient. This uses twice the memory that you need.
And again, but if you have to use older versions, which is what I was asking.
Fopen works just fine. Fopen fread works in every version.
Yeah.
Even PHP 2.
That would be the more efficient way to do it, but I'm lazy. So that's how we did it.
Next question. That's also not binary thing.
Yeah. Is PHP binary? PHP.NET binary? Yeah, I mean, you're right, but in this case it works, so.
Oh, wait a second, what's not binary thing?
File?
Implode?
Yeah.
Implode binary.
Implode is binary thing.
File is not.
Well, a file has to look for returns and stuff, so in that sense, but I don't think it'll stop. It might. Okay, yeah, maybe. Perhaps file is not binary safe, so that by definition would be.
Yeah.
That's true.
It's not binary safe, but yeah.
I have a question about that. Script that you just showed us, is that just uses an include at the top of your, of every PHP document that you're serving out, and then at the time that the page is called for, it's determined whether or not it's going to use cache or create it dynamically there on the fly.
Well, right there we print it out, so no, but that would be one good usage of doing that. It does a little query get php.net, and say you want to print php.net out in 15 places, you just go print to get php.net. And first time it would download it for you, write it to the cache file, and all the subsequent times it would just return it from a local file. If you need to use it multiple times, you might want to even just save it in the data in your variable in your PHP script as well. Most likely you're not going to want to print out the PHP.net website multiple times unless you're a little cuckoo, but not that you are. But still.
I actually have a related question for a related problem where, you know, I've had times where I'm caching, say, RPC calls, and yeah, I'm doing like the calls, and what I'd like to be able to do though is to sort of signal an end of the file to the user's browser, but keep on processing the script. Is that possible?
Read the connection handling chapter in the manual.
Okay.
It talks about that.
There are ways to do that.
The way that I'm doing it is I do an fsock open to call a different script to do the processing.
But there are better ways.
Better ways.
Well, I mean, basically, there's no way to tell the browser to stop. You can't just sort of send an end of file, but you can tell PHP not to abort after the remote browser has gone away. And stuff. So, well.
Yeah, because that does that, but the browser will keep the, you know, expecting.
No, there's no way of getting around that.
What about the shutdown
button? Well, no, that's the other way around. That's
the register request shutdown functions only run once the script terminates. What he wants to do is the browser comes in, gets the information, and will say done, but then he can process it. There's no way to do that unless the user himself hits abort. I mean, you can put up a little message saying hit the stop button now. You are done, go away.
Exactly.
But no, there's nothing in the HTTP protocol that you can send over the pipe that will tell that browser to go. Because PHP does not have a direct connection to the browser. It goes through whatever web server PHP is running under. It's the web server that maintains the connection between the web server and the browser. You sort of just feed information to the web server. No, there's nothing that you can send through to do that. So your trick would work.
Okay.
But you get around.
Again, if you have all the data out, the browser will usually render it, even if it's not fully downloaded. So, yeah, you'll see that annoying thing.
It'll keep spinning. Yeah, the throbber keys. That's the thing that's bugging me.
Yeah, there might be some other ways, but... All right, so less output is good because it saves server bandwidth. And if that costs you $50 a gigabyte, it's really good. Think of server CPU and memory. That depends on what you're doing. You're compressing the data when you send it out? No, it doesn't. However, the less data you have to write, the less you use your CPU, the less you use memory, and so it does increase it a bit if you just use some tricks that we're about to go over. Has the same effect on the client side. If you remember the old computers and you had big, long websites, and suddenly you realized you couldn't do anything anymore, you press down, wait a half hour, and then you'd see the next page of data. It's good. Again, that doesn't really work if you're doing compression, but decompression is a one-time thing. If you have it, it's sort of 50-50. Yeah. You know that already. I've said enough times. Enlarged size bandwidth is the most costly bottleneck. All right. Now we're going to go about reducing output. That's HTML for a bunch of city boys who have nothing better to do with their time. Just use that. I mean, use plain HTML. It renders nicely on all browsers, and you can really get a lot of optimizations put in.
Screws up your DOM, though.
Sliding bullets.
Exactly.
That's true.
Well,
yeah.
Sissy girls use.
Sissy girls just use plain XML. These preprocessors to eliminate a white space. A lot of data comes out nicely, like Dreamweaver, for example. And I know none of you would ever use that product, but say you did. It comes out with a lot of tabs. And a lot of spaces. Tabs and spaces are bytes. If you can reduce the bytes, you can get more performance. And you may think, okay, I've just saved 200 bytes in a large HTML file. What does that do? And you just had now say over the series of 150,000 requests. That does a lot. It saves you money from that, but it also, every little bit helps. Yeah, there you go. I'm getting a bit ahead of myself. That's the problem with sliding bullets. I keep forgetting that I cover that stuff. Next. Okay, HTML observation. Only closed tabs need to be closed. Test this with all browsers before you do it. I'm not saying this as a generic solution, but P tags don't really need to be closed at all. LI tags don't need to be closed. This I was surprised to find out. I read a tutorial before this thing. You don't need to close DD and R tags most of the time.
You're getting a little bit ahead of yourself.
You're not going to listen to you anymore.
Yeah. Why not just use reset compression on the pages?
Yeah, that as well. I mean, this is just, again, I'm going into what you would do if you were as insane as me.
if you share your file names also, so you have shorter links.
All form variables are single letters.
Benchmark that?
I mean, again, it's just, these are things to keep in mind. They're not things you have to do. Remove all comments. Again, it's an easy way of doing it. It doesn't hurt you not to have comments. It just means that some script kiddie can't steal your HTML, which, I mean, it's nice to share, but it doesn't really help. Main tags don't work. Really, they don't. If you use a local search tool, it might, but most of the big script engine, most of the big search engines, Lycos, All the Web, Google, don't use meta tags when they index your data, because a lot of people put porn, naked women, naked porn, on the top of their web pages. And search engines started to realize it's not a good idea to index that. Also, if you're using comments to do that type of stuff, search engines also don't index that. So you don't need to spam the search engines like that because they've already decided to ignore you. Use parent HTML tags to specify child values. This is also just a convenience thing. You can specify a BG color and a TR if you need to have the same BG color for all child TD rows. Do that. It saves you bandwidth. Yes, it also just saves you a pain in the ass, basically. Fully qualify links. This, most browsers are pretty smart about it, but they do have to resolve that. So it does save loading time a bit. And finally, I actually do really like this one. I know it might be a little crazy, but you don't need to quote all your attributes. Data, as long as there's no spaces or weird characters in it, you don't really need to quote it. For example, that would need to be quoted because there's a space between title, pit, and page. But in general, you don't. All right, CSS optimization.
Thanks, Sterling. Which compresses better, lowercase or uppercase characters?
If you're using CSS, you need to close your tags properly, otherwise you'll have bad nesting.
Really? I've been able to see that. Oh yeah, well, in some cases, yeah. That's a good point. In some cases, if you're using CSS, which is the better optimization, by the way, you'll need to close some of your tags. Again, you have to test all this stuff. This should be done. This is the last step of optimization.
Keep going, I'm just gonna interject afterwards, but I just find out on the spot, like, why not just screw all your tables as well? Go to the divs.
Yeah. Exactly, you have to use that HTML.
If you want to.
I mean, you know we're screwing everything else.
It's the trade-off between performance and convenience. These are just things to keep in mind. If it gets too annoying for you, unless you're working on some site that gets unless you're making Google, for example, and even they aren't as crazy as me, you don't need to use all of these. They're just tips and tricks you can keep in mind if you're using too much bandwidth. Again, this is online. You can go through it. Use CSS instead of a test. Instead, font color equals, just create a class for your stuff. That's also just a matter of convenience, again, and overuse. CSS can be cached. So put your CSS in an external file. Don't embed it in every web page. That way the browser will cache the CSS and reload it each time. It saves a lot of requests, I mean a lot of bandwidth. Use short names for CSS attributes. I'm sorry, but if you're using the same attribute 15, 20, 30 times in a page, it helps if you save 10 bytes. Again, it's just if you want it. If you want to be crazy like me, do this. You can override, if you're doing a small web page or a small site that only needs a little, you can override it. It's not suggested for maintainability, but it's something you can keep in mind. CSS can control table definitions. For example, control width, tags, etc. And if you want to do that, again, you can use that to, instead of specifying a lot of properties in your tables.
This all seems like a lot of work. Can you script this? Is it an HTML optimizer?
There. I'll go over that one.
Alright.
Two notes about the CSS. You probably want to link the CSS file, and that'll actually... Okay. Oh, and the other note is that if you use CSS2 selectors, you don't have to use IDs at all.
Ah, cool. How about that? All right.
Use IDs, because you can specify with selectors. with CSS2 injury selectors.
All right, here you go. Just for you. You can use mod rewrite to make things a lot shorter. I told you it was in there. It works, man. No, if you have, for example, this is just even for convenience. If you have a graphics, you didn't get tired of keep typing graphics, but you need it for your organization structure or you like it, just put a little mod rewrite entry in there, and you can use G in all your scripts instead of graphics. It saves it also. Yahoo does do this, though. So I'm not that crazy. I read it about Yahoo, and then that's where I got it from. And again, it's just this little rewrite entry. This sets the map file. It needs to be in a tab-delimited format here. And then you have the rewrite rule, which does it. This is online again, so you can just download it from there. I know all of you love the idea and are going to use it in your scripts. And if you go down a bit. Finally, this is something that you really should do. The other stuff is advisory if you're crazy like me. This is HTTP can you can specify how you want your pages cached and when you want them cached. It's good to set a last modify so the browser will know, okay, it was last modified. Yes, see, I told you. I told you. Anyhow. Yeah, turn the sound off at least. Come on. Last modified, so the browser can say, okay, it was last modified then. I have it in my cache 2 minutes before, 2 minutes after it was last modified, so I'll serve up that version instead. Expires, you can tell the browser, okay, you have to get a new version at this date. And finally, cache control allows you to set certain options. Matched age is the maximum amount of time in seconds that you want it to be there. S-max age is HTTP caching also works with proxies, which is evil, I think, meaning that proxies will, if you have a lot of clients going through loaded proxies, then they will share the same cache. I usually just do it for one user, because it gets annoying after a while. S-max age will bypass the proxy. Well, let's put it this way. If you're not using Microsoft IIS proxy, it will bypass the proxy. And private, I actually forgot, but Rasmus knows.
Private means that cache control refers to private caches.
Right, okay. Yeah.
Private caches being end-user caches, like your browser's
cache,
on-disk cache.
And you don't want to get too crazy about this, but it's good to have. All right, now more information. This is for your, when you go online, you can see HTML Tidy will tidy up your HTML files and optimize them for you. I got a lot of the tips and the most crazy ones, it's not just me, from Web Reference.
And,
exactly. And this is an explanation of how HTTP caching works and the different options associated with that. And how are we doing with time?
Half an hour.
Half an hour? Ah, cool. And then so that. Alright, so alright, HTTP supports, again, native compression via gzip. Uses level zip, which is the same, five of an individual. Alright, you can just stop reading your mail.
I'm not reading my mail, but I'm enjoying this.
That's it. It's the same compression that gzip uses. It greatly reduces bandwidth. It's cross-browser compliant, meaning it supports the latest versions of IE and Mozilla and Opera. I believe Opera, too. It's Opera. People in Norway pronounce it Opera, so.
This is not Norway.
It's from Norway. It's from Norway. Anyhow, compression can be cached as well. They can, when you put the compressed file, it'll be cached as an uncompressed file in the browser cache. It's CPU intensive on the server and the client, but again, bandwidth is your most likely bottleneck, so don't worry too much about that. Not only PHP compression. PHP supports compression within the PHP scripts. It's a pretty good compression. I don't recommend it. I've gotten better results with modgzip, but if you don't have modgzip installed and you do have PHP and zlib installed, then you can use PHP's native compression. It uses PHP as the concept of output buffering, meaning you can output data and actually have it saved in variable before it gets sent to the user, or saved in a variable, saved in your PHP, and saved in memory before it gets sent to the user. And what OBGZ handler will do, which is the output compression, is it will, once you save stuff in your memory, then it will compress it and send it to the user. And this is configurable output compression, turning it on, and compression level. As you know, gzip supports different compression levels from 1 to 9. I usually support, so to suggest, like 3, 4, 5. So, HDIP and compress is the way you should do it. I believe Chuck wrote it, right? And it's a simple wrapper around it. And what that does is it will handle different things, such as does this browser support it? Browsers send an accept encoding header saying that they will either accept encoded data or not, I mean compressed data or not. And this will do that detection for you. It's a simple, easy way to do it. You can also, if you have a header PHP file and a footer PHP file, just put it in there. One thing to note is it really doesn't support chunked output. You have to output your entire buffer at the same time. So if you're not interested in saving bandwidth that much, you might want to just do it or directly output each line, because that will save user response time. MyGzip. Alright, MyGzip is cool.
Does he like output compression?
Yeah.
Where is that defined?
The PHP any file.
Okay.
And you can define it there. MyGzip is a really cool module. Some people have had problems with it. They never can tell me what. But, I love it.
It's probably mostly with the authors.
Okay, yeah. For example, the authors, don't get along too well with the people in Apache. Even though it is an Apache module. However, it has provided me, sometimes I looked and I couldn't believe it, 80% in compression, meaning 80% less bandwidth, meaning I got to go out to a nice restaurant a few times over, because I didn't have to pay $50.
That's a nice restaurant?
Anytime.
Okay, Burger King is fine. You know what? It's better than McDonald's. You know, well, in Italy, restaurants are not that expensive, but it also provides compression statistics so I can know that it got me at a couple of nice restaurants. You can choose compression via meme type, mime type, mime type. Alright. Also by file name extensions. So you can choose those and it's filters. Again, the modules of documentation, just go there. It's out of the scope of this. It's just to get you, it's to whet your appetite. You can also exclude compression from certain browsers. It auto detects that, I believe. However, if you just want to say, okay, this browser sucks and they don't know it, you can say exclude that from that browser. Alright, cool. It won't constantly recompress your data. If the data is somewhat the same, it'll just send out the compressed data.
Somewhat.
Exactness isn't important. For example, if it's the same, it will cache the compression and just send that out, which is cool, and then more information. Again, these slides are mainly for your online enjoyment. It's the MyGzip home page. Next is clustering. Okay. Clustering is the process of taking multiple computers, and I'm not going to stop reading that. It's you take a bunch of computers, if you saw the image in the beginning, and you network them all together, and you have them same serve up the same data, or different data at the same site to different people. And it really helps, because instead of one computer doing all your processing, you then have 10 computers, you can imagine it's a bit faster, and clustering solutions now. Basic clustering is just round-robin DNS, which gives it to one of the computers on the cluster. And you really shouldn't use this. I mean, you can if you don't want to set up the most basic reverse proxy or SQL, but it's somewhat used. Next is reverse proxying will it won't really handle load balancing. I mean, there are reverse proxies that will handle load balancing, but by definition it won't. But it will act as a front end for your clusters and then just pass off the different requests to computers. And then finally, you have a load balancer. What those do is they check the loads on each of your servers and make intelligent decisions about where you should send the request to and who should handle the request. Alright, Squid is excellent on single computer machines. It's also very good on handling clusters. It's one of those reverse proxies that can handle load balancing. And you just have it on an external IP port 80. You use SquidGuard Redirector, which is a little Squid program that helps with that reverse proxying and maintaining cache. And then you can direct it to different computers on your cluster. Sometimes you might want to, actually it helps performance to have multiple servers running on the same computer sometimes. So you have Apache on port 80 and 81 on Lobos, for example. And then you also have a computer in the network serving up a request for you. By the way, these two images are taken from Rasmus's PHP scripting the web slides. Yes. Sorry.
Share the knowledge.
Yes. Share the code, share the knowledge, man.
Are you getting the session variables? How you deal with session in that part?
Right here.
Wow.
How did I just predict your head or what? I have ESP, man. I'm telling you. I'm telling you. PHP can run mostly unmodified when dealing with clustering solutions. The one catch is if you're using sessions. The idea of sessions is to remember data about a user over multiple requests. However, the default session solution just uses plain files on the local machine. So you start a session on one computer in the cluster, the next request might go to a different computer, and the session won't exist in that local file. That's a pain in the butt. However, there are solutions for this. The simplest solution is just to use NFS. And NFS is Network Mounted File System. You can share that, have one machine store your chef sessions if you're rich, and then have all machines access that for sessions. You can cluster it over a few machines even. This is not really a solution to the problem, but if you're storing data in your session data in RDM VM anyway, meaning you're not building this from the ground up, RDBMs have no problem handling that simply because they're good for distributed computing anyway. And I probably use the wrong term for that, but next one. You all understand. M session. This handles the problem of it. This is designed to handle the problem. What it is a separate daemon that you run on one of your computers, and all program next to that one computer. And they, by the way, the URL for M session is on the next slide, so you don't have to worry about that. It connects to that daemon, asks for the session data, and then sends the session data back. M session is a PHP extension. All you have to do is enable it in your compiler and configure, and then enable it in your session backend or in your PHP any file, and that will automatically be loaded in. Next is SRM. SRM is currently under development, but it's a really cool idea. It's basically bringing the concept of an application server to PHP, and what you'll be able to do is write persistent connections, persistent resources with PHP. So SRM, you'll write your little PHP code, which will accept data. It'll be a daemon running itself. It'll accept data. You can log it to a file, to a database. You can have persistent database connections in that little bit PHP program run under SRM. And then you use your PHP programs, the concept of remote objects, and you just load in a remote SRM object, and you can use the data from SRM. It's still a... script running magic. Script running machine. No, it was magic though.
It's machine.
I can't remember. It changes every day. It was VLSRM. It was SRM.
Vulkan Logic
SRM. Yes. I'm sorry. So ignorant. And the next slide is more information.
Generally, there's a couple other possibilities there. Mm-hmm. A lot of load balancers have something called state grid persistence, which will send the same client always to the same server.
Do you trust that?
Yeah.
I never trust that.
Yeah, they do have timeouts.
Yeah, but I mean, remote clients, his IP lease can expire and come in with a different IP that tends to screw up all the state.
Yeah, that and also it sort of defeats the purpose of a cluster in a way. Cluster, I mean, doesn't defeat it, but it doesn't help load balancing because if a lot of people have their sessions.
If you've got a million people hitting you, you're going to be.
Yeah,
it is a solution. I just.
There's also some global file systems besides NFS that allow sharing a lot better than NFS.
Okay, like SAML, for example.
No, they actually have file systems that are distributed.
Coda.
Coda's one. There's something by the guys that work with.
I would not want to run a big website off of it.
Yeah.
Use
that big license. I mean,
personally, I always use the database.
You can use a database, or when SRM becomes stable, that'll be a good solution, I think. Of course, I helped it develop SRM a little bit, so I'm partially biased. Squid Proxy, I believe squid.org works. You can try that. At least I think I tested that. M-Session is here. I know that one. And VLSRM.net is SRM. There's a beta version up there which you can try. Right now, of those, well, Squid doesn't really matter, but of the two, I would use M-Session. However, if you're looking for an open source project to work on, SRM is really cool, and it needs your help. So, that would be cool. How much time do we have left?
About 20 minutes before the break.
20 minutes?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. All right, so I'm just going to go over and ask if anyone has questions on what's been happening so far, comments.
Yeah, but can we be upstairs on the question?
Squid.org is wrong.
Squid-cat.
There's a little note on squid.org. If you're looking for the proxy, go there.
Okay, so go to squid-cache. Well, that'll be updated when you go to the website. I guess you could even do it on that computer now, but it will be updated then. We'd like to leave OOP till the break. I can go over some more neat issues as well. But one of the things about an advanced PHP talk is I'm sure a lot of you are advanced already. And if you want to give your, if you have any questions or...
Yeah, best of the we'll cover
them. Like one talk?
If anything I've talked on, you have some better suggestions like you did, or...
I have a question. Is there a reason that Ramses, your presentation system, doesn't have a last modified on it?
Not really.
Okay.
You're looking at the headers?
Yeah, it runs really... Well, I mean, it's just been loading really slow, and when you go back, it has to reload, and you go forward.
There's a reason for that.
Sterling hasn't contributed.
A bit of the slowness is the fact that it's running out of my DSL connection at home, and they're sending off...
Bandwidth is the most important factor.
But now, basically, this thing was designed to run locally on laptops.
Mm-hmm.
I rarely have internet connections when I get talks. It's sort of a weird
thing. Is the system open source or source?
It's in PHP CVS. I haven't given it a name yet.
Okay.
Not the full name. Yeah, it's in. Go to the CVS.php. On the space CVS, so PHP and check out a module called Press2, PRES2.
Cool. Do that right now.
Yeah, we also, by the way, as a resource for you, this might be a good time to just go over some good resources. Prez.php.net is a good resource.
Conferences. I need to change that over to the new system.
Yeah.
We're sort of in a state of flux right now between the old presentation system and the new presentation system. Not sure what to do with years and years of presentations written in the old version, and whether we should just create the URLs.
But there is a large repository of past presentations. You'll notice that Radness has given the same presentation for the past 4 years.
Not quite.
No, he has changed it a lot.
Changes a little bit.
A couple of slides.
The title page always changes. Any questions, or have I been unclear about anything? I mean, I know I've been wrong about a lot, but... I mean, okay, then also, you can check out php.net. Also, there's a documentation there. I'm sure you all know about that. It's rather frequently updated, and you'd be surprised if you're wondering how to do something. You'd be surprised how many times we get questions that are RTFMs. PHP has probably the most advanced documentation system of any open source project. We have user contributed notes. So if they see the documentation, they spent 5 hours and they're like, I have no clue how to do this, and then they figure it out. A lot of times you'll see that on the user contributed notes, which is quite good. You'll also see a lot of people asking questions. Please don't. We have a lot of people who, or we had a lot of people going through that, clicking, delete this note, no, we don't care about your porn site, delete this note. And so it's a very good resource though. There's also on zen.com, a good range of tutorials. I wrote one on the 21 deadly mistakes in PHP. I don't know how programming can have deadly mistakes, but, I guess if you get woken up at 3 in the morning enough times by your boss, it starts to become a deadly mistake. You also have phpbuilder.com. That used to be really good. That's kind of stagnated at this point. Those are good sites to actually go and hone your skills. Also, another note is watching the PHP development lists, watching, not posting about the one true format for PHP, but watching can actually give you a lot of good inside information on PHP. We're going to show a bit of that in OOP. Andre's going to go over that, how objects work, etc. But it's a real education to stay on developers list a while. Ignore any thread that says we need more OOP or case sensitivity. For example, ignore those threads. But there are a lot of good stuff. If you see a message by Manuel Lemos, kill file right away. and that's a very, it's a surprisingly good resource. You also have PHP General. Most of the core devs hang out on there. Not anymore. Okay.
I read it, but I don't think
they got afraid of you all, but it still is a very active mailing list. So if you have a question about PHP, that's a good place to post. Andre loves to answer you.
And the news server is good too. News.php.net. Can't handle the traffic.
Comp.lang.php.
Yeah. If you can't handle the traffic of the mailing list, that whole thing is gateway to a news server. So fire off your news reader. You used to use these 10 years ago, remember? Fire off your news reader, point it at news.nmtp.news.php.net, and you'll see all the mailing lists. It's a nice way to get a thread.
You also actually have that via web interface as well, yeah, to browse.
HTTP news stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that's also very handy to search. There's years of knowledge base in there. Many sweat and answers of Rasmus answering the same question over and over again. Slowly the light in the eyes goes out. Those are some good resources. How much time would we go?
5 minutes.
Oh, come on now. You guys need to have some opinions here.
Let's debate something.
Let's talk about the future of PHP.
That's more of this tomorrow.
Register globals.
Yes, register globals.
Yeah.
I actually have been to classes where people refuse to give an opinion on whether it's good to have them or not. I want to hear
someone else.
They're bad.
They're afraid of me.
Yeah,
should be off.
Off. Well,
at least you really know what you're doing.
Yeah, exactly.
Still, you never know what questions we send you. How can I get, apparently, I'm not sure if it's get or a post.
You can use the request store. In PHP versions 4.1 and above, because register globals, without it, it's usually been a pain in the butt to actually access request data. You have to go global HTTP get, HTTP underscore get underscore vars. For example, access get vars. You have to do checking whether it's a post var or or a get there, or a cookie there. They've combined that into one array that is a super global, meaning it's available everywhere and anywhere. It's available in your functions without calling global. It's available in the global namespace as well. And that contains all the request information sent from get, post, and cookie. And they've also now created other super globals called underscore get, underscore post, underscore cookie, which will allow you to access those variables directly. You also have underscore session now as well.
And five.
Oh yeah, and five.
Server. And EMV.
Yeah. You have a lot of underscores.
But I mean, the sort of the opposite side of this argument is that you can also just turn off your warning level to do all, so you get the notices of uninitialized variables. If you fix all your uninitialized variable problems, chances are your program is safe having register globals on. Because the only thing that register globals off saves you is if you forget to initialize a variable and you do string dot equals something without actually setting string to a null string to begin with. PHP will sort of started at null unless the user has injected something in there. So it's really silly programming mistakes that register globals sort of save you from, but we do have a warning level that will tell you exactly where these mistakes are. If you are E all clean, there's no reason to turn off register globals. It makes your code much longer, harder to read.
That is true, but it's also you can't always depend. I write perfect code. I write perfect code. However, you're not sure about whether other people will write perfect code. PHP Nuke has had a lot of problems with that.
But again, I mean, if you turn on EOL and they fix the warnings.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yes, I mean, if you're running a lot of other people's code, perhaps turning register globals off is the simple way of just making sure that crap code.
For example, on a shared server,
yeah,
it would make sense. Or shared server is good. It's also, I mean, yeah, you could spend hours hacking PHP Nuke, but sometimes they might have a little thing. You have a PHP any setting saying error reporting equals eall. PHP Nuke has a function calling error reporting set enum, and then you don't know whether the errors are there. I mean, it's not very common.
But it still doesn't help you very much because that same application is unlikely to run with register globals off.
Right, yeah.
So if you want it to run, you're going to have to turn it on.
Exactly. So don't run applications that are written for register globals off.
Don't always have that choice.
Rep for the error reporting function in the code so you can see if they're turning it off.
For example, with us too. But yeah.
Hey, that goes perfect.
Yeah. Well, you wrote it.
Yeah. Since we've got some of the experts in the room, what if you had any advice on where to look for ways to organize your PHP so that it's maintainable and scalable from a sanity perspective? I'm starting to do PHP more, things are getting longer, and there's a recommended organizational structure for those techniques.
I think the same is true, that's always been true, that you want to separate your presentation layer from your business logic layer. Just because with PHP you can mix the two. You can write a single HTML file that has business logic everywhere in it. Doesn't mean you have to do that. And that's a very typical criticism of PHP that sort of creates a mess of logic and HTML all in the same place. Just don't do it that way. Put your business logic off in a separate file. If you do a view source on the PHP.net web pages, for example, you will see there's an include file called layout, includelayout.inc, that has all kinds of logic along that figures out the layout of our pages and does behind the scenes business logic. And then each of our .php files is mostly constant. So in that sense, that's your first step. Separate the presentation layer from your business logic. Because you may end up changing your presentation layer. You don't have to change a whole lot of code. One file from somewhere. Then it comes down to, well, how do you write your business logic code, your actual real code? How do you write that in a way that's maintainable? That's complete sort of personal choice. For an object-oriented approach, maybe you want to put everything in objects and keep everything nice and separated and modular. I tend to prefer a more procedural type of programming with objects every now and then when it makes sense. But at that point, it's the same problem you have in any program. It's not specific to PHP. How do you write code that you can maintain?
No, it's not specific at all. Some communities have sort of revolving around certain structures.
Yeah.
So the code community, there's a lot of work around the fuse box structure.
Yeah. If you look at the Pear project, P-E-A-R, the PhD on that, they have a set of coding guidelines that talks about what to name your functions, how to name your variables, how to indent your code, how to comment your code, how to use PHP docs, the non-magic generate documentation from your code. So that's one approach to that problem. I find that a little tedious myself. I need to get stuff done. You have all these rules to follow. But I mean, if you do have a big project with a lot of developers on it, yes, you probably will have to take something like the pair style guide, maybe adapt it to your particular case, but be quite strict about it. If everyone writes code that's commented the same way with functions that are consistently named, variables that are consistently named, there you go. You have maintainable code. So I would say that's our best example, probably, is the pair style.
There's, just to add to that a little bit, there's pair, but that I believe is based on order. So you can also, they're developing one true framework. The groupware, I believe, is the, I don't know, Chuck is more for that, but the pair guidelines are based on the Horde guidelines, so you can check those out. It's also something I see a lot is people put a lot of their library files within the htdocs directory, and a good way to handle this is to put it outside of your htdocs directory, because you don't want people calling these files by hand. Do not name your files .inc and then put them in your htdocs directory.
Yes. And you can do that. It's a new comp rule in there to block direct access.
Right, but a lot of people don't do that. And there's a lot of sites where you can view the source. I've seen it before of the site. So make sure either those files are parsed or you have an hpconf directive denying .inc files. That's one good thing to keep your library.
Just make them parsed.
Yeah, don't just make the parts, but it's better than nothing.
He's saying change them to .php instead of .inc. That's a slide in my introductory tutorials, not just do that.
Well,
it's much
is,
worse executing code than being able to read it.
If you have it in just function libraries or class libraries, then yeah. But if that code actually calls a function or something directly, definitely let them just read it. Or better yet, put it in your lib directory. However, if it's just a class file, still just put it in your lib directory. It's those two options are the lesser of two evils. Better not to be evil at all.
There was and maybe remembering this all wrong and probably crazy on some of it. Over the past couple of years reading some of the resources you're talking about, I've seen a couple of comments that there is a particularly high penalty for implementing your code within user-defined functions. In PhD. Now, I mean, not having drunk the Kool-Aid, I put everything in the front of myself.
Yeah.
Do you have any idea what I'm talking about? I've seen this on
the video. I do, yeah.
What's up with that?
What's up? Alright. Well, the idea is, yes, function calls are slow, but they're not that slow. Don't worry about it.
Cool.
Exactly. I mean, if you're going to call the same function over and over and over and over again, you might want to avoid it, but it's really, functions are there for your convenience. PHP is there for your convenience. If you want to make it fast, write it in assembly. You're also sure.
You're also sure. Don't worry about it. Write it in assembly. No, you want it.
It's also, you have ensured job security if you write your web applications in assembly. No one can fire you. They can't afford it.
Pretty psychiatric counseling, yeah.
Exactly.
How do you live in a consistent universe telling people to not worry about function calls, but to their HTML?
Bandwidth is actually much more important, again, than basic execution speed of a function call. It's like 0.00001 second more. And if you want to write your code with no functions, I mean...
Might as well be using the
algorithm. Exactly.
0.001 second, the algorithm, don't worry about it. The answer is there is no performance penalty.
Yeah, okay.
You aren't willing to say.
Yeah, well, there is a performance penalty. What he showed was that you have a second's performance if you execute the function, I think, a million times
or
such.
It's like asking your game, you know, penalized for your abstraction, basically, you know?
Yeah.
You have more abstraction, easier to use code, or,
you know? Obviously, technically, there will be a slight overhead.
Of course.
You have to branch to somewhere else to execute this function. There's a simple echo that echoes something else, or you have that echo inside the function. Logically, there's going to be a slight performance penalty for calling the function. It's trivial, PHP. it's even less trivial if it's an object you have to instantiate and call a method inside an object. There are lots of properties in the object. Then it's even more overhead calling these things. Straight procedural style function call? No. I've never seen anybody complain about that. I've seen some complaints about the object for overhead in PHP. But that is a little bit slow. And this object instantiation in PHP is too slow.
But that's going to change.
We are fixing that, and that's going to speed up. But procedural function calls, I've never heard complaints.
Yeah. Well, actually, George Fossendell wrote a message.
Well, George is nuts.
Yeah, exactly.
He's nuts. All right, so I'm not going to worry about it.
Good. There you go.
Another difference between the function versus the white space thing is that if you have long functions or a lot of function calls, it doesn't penalize the user of your website. Whereas if you're, you know, if they're on a 56K modem and you're sending 35% more bytes than you need to, they're paying for that. Just as if you use images to say, you know, home and next and stuff instead of using the text. So a lot of people who design websites forget about the user. And that's probably the most important thing about a website.
Right. And for example, Google is excellent with the user. How many people here use another search engine besides Google?
A what?
Sometimes, yeah. There you go. Just the question was, will GZIP and the P accelerator be included in future versions of PHP and Apache? The answer to the GZIP compression is it's included
in PHP.
In PHP.
Not in Apache.
Not in Apache. And, yeah.
There is in Apache 2, there's a mod GZ module. So, yes, Apache 2 does have the equivalent of mod GZIP bundle. That part's yes.
The PHP accelerator? Ooh, they've been reading the mailing list and trying to come up with hard ones, haven't they?
That one, maybe. It's a little bit tough because there are, I don't know, 6 different projects now, I think, that's doing a PHP accelerator. So which one do we choose? About this account, the other file.
And they may all be available, like, via some repository that's easy to install and stuff like that.
For example, Pear.
There's not going to be an official one.
No, we're trying to strip down the amount of stuff that we distribute with each new release of PHP, because our releases are just getting slower and slower, because our code base is getting bigger and bigger. And there's so many developers that we have to coordinate. Hey, are you ready to release? Like, oh, no, I just changed everything. I need another 3 weeks, right? And then in those 3 weeks, a bunch of people sitting around twiddling their thumbs, and then they start changing other stuff, and then suddenly the whole tree is completely unstable. So we need to move some of that stuff over into the Pear infrastructure where it's easy to install stuff. You can just type Pear install the thing you want to install.
And it's getting really close.
Yeah, it works today. Grab the CVS version of PHP and play with the Pear installer. You can install stuff just by saying Pear install, and
there's free stuff.
Even C extensions, so stuff like various caches, they put them into the Pear repository, you'll be able to just do Pear install APC cache.
And it's also, well, you can do that with Debian now if you want to, by the way, but it's also PHP 4.3 is when Pear is supposedly stable and ready for your general consumption. And I've been using it, it works great. So it's something definitely to check out and maybe contribute to, because if you're not a hardcore C programmer, but you have some really useful PHP libraries, it's always good. You get credit, and you also get other developers using your code, revising your code, and helping your code.
Right back.
Now, one last question.
No, this then would fit. Just Apache Q questions. I know, Rasmus, I've seen you post repeatedly on this. Some pressure is occurring to those of us who are managing those servers migrate, and if our site is very PHP intensive, I gotta go with some answers and don't know quite what to say.
Where's the pressure coming from?
Just people who say that it's developing. I guess just the people who see, who look and say, well, we have to stay up, keeping up with the Jones.
See, that's part of the problem. I really did not want to patch 2 to be Apache at all. It is a completely different server.
It is nowhere near as stable or as robust as the Apache 1 code base. There is no features in it that Apache 1 doesn't have right now. Well, end user useful features at this point. It's a nicer framework to add on to on top of, but there are no killer features that you say, I have to use Apache 2 because there's this. They aren't there. Unless the feature you want is less reliable and slower. Because it's also now slower than that. So you have pressure to migrate to a less reliable, slower server. You have to sort of question.
The people giving this presentation do not vouch for Raspbian.
I can give you one concrete example. The integration of both the secure server with the instance. You don't have to maintain two separate servers. I'm sure my server.
I mean, get Apache, get mod SSL. Big deal. I mean, that's how you solve it with Apache mod. I mean, that's a little bit of administrative laziness. Just because it sort of comes bundled nicer. Even though it's less reliable and slower, you will prefer it because it's easier to install. Ouch. That's not good. It basically, the bottom line, it's not ready yet.
So, bottom line then for us is not forget it.
No, definitely not. Test it, but it's not ready for production use yet.
What's your take on the horizon? That's not great.
That's the, we have a break now. Okay. Maybe talk about this.
I'll still answer that part. Apache 2, for static file stuff, it's okay, you can use it today. For dynamic stuff, we're a year off.
Mm-hmm.